From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Donvan in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. They say that the dating world is a jungle, that there are no good men, that everyone is taken. Sometimes it seems that way. And a new book says, it is that way. That demographics have changed, and that there are now many more college-educated women than men, and that there is the rise of hookup culture, mobile apps, and internet dating. This hour on Point, the world of dating and the search for love today. You can join us on air or online. Are you in the dating market? What's your advice? What are you learning? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Well, joining me first today from New York is John Berger. John is a contributor to Fortune magazine, but now he is the author of a book called Datonomics, How Dating Became a Lopsided Numbers Game. John Berger, welcome to On Point.
John, thanks for having me on.
So, John, your essential insight about the numbers game, what's the reality, what's the numerical reality today that matters?
Well, among college graduates in their 20s, there are essentially four women for every three men. For those in their 30s, it's closer to five women for every four men. But the bottom line is that there actually are more women than men in the college-educated dating pool. And because educated Americans have become more rigid about who they're willing to date, i.e. they won't marry non-college-educated people, this is a problem for women.
So, in other words, you're saying that women with degrees don't tend not to want to marry men without degrees, and they're outnumbered in that sense.
Well, I mean, men also don't date across socioeconomic lines in great numbers either. But for men, that isn't really a problem statistically because there's an ever-growing supply of college graduate women. For women, it narrows their dating pool more.
Well, let's take a very short diversion away from your central thesis and just ask why. What is your thinking on why there are more women graduates than male graduates today?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is more women are going to college, and it's been that way since the 1980s.
Well, actually, you're restating the question for me. So why are more women going to college than men?
More women are going to college because they're getting better grades and they're better students. They're better at schoolwork. Now, if you give boys and girls intelligence tests, boys and girls score comparably. But because of maturity differences, girls mature intellectually and socially at a faster rate than boys. Because of those maturity differences, because of those developmental differences, girls fare better when it comes to actual schoolwork.
So in your book, after you establish that there's this lopsided ratio between men and women who have college degrees, you make the argument that not only that women are having trouble finding partners who they would consider eligible, but that the actual patterns of what's happening between men and women has changed, and that that comes straight back to this number, and that it has an almost evolutionary aspect to it. Talk about that.
Well, it's not just that the numbers are more challenging. It's that the lopsided gender ratios change the behavior. And there's a ton of social science that's been written on this subject, starting with the work of Marcia Guttentag, who was a scholar at Harvard. And basically the bottom line is that when men are in oversupply, the dating culture is more likely to emphasize romance and courtship. Mm-hmm. But when women are in oversupply, the whole dating culture becomes more sexualized and women get treated as sex objects and men are more likely to play the field.
And what's the you cite some evolutionary thinking to this. What would be the evolutionary goal served by this?
Well, a lot of the research on human behavior as it relates to sex ratios grows out of animal science and animal behavior. And in the wild, zoologists who've studied species that are monogamous or at least monogamous during mating season, when they mess around with the sex ratios in the controlled population, what they find is that if you take away males or create an uneven sex ratio in which there are more females than males, the males are more likely to abandon their mates.
You spend a lot of time on college campuses. And your portrayal of Sarah Lawrence College in Bronxville, New York, is probably one that's, that Sarah Lawrence Public Relations Department is not in love with. But you do portray a fairly fluid, let's say, hookup situation there, which appears to stem straight from the fact that the ratio of women students to men is, what, 3-1 there?
3-1. Yeah, I mean, I should preface this by saying that obviously most people don't choose colleges based entirely on sex ratios. And Sarah Lawrence is a great college. It has great programs, great professors. So just because the dating situation there is affected by the sex ratio doesn't mean, I'm not saying people shouldn't go there. But yes, the fact that there are 3 women for every 1 man there does give the men tremendous, or the heterosexual men at least, tremendous leverage when it comes to all things dating related. And I do think in the hookup culture is more extreme there.
And what are the attitudes of those men towards the women and towards their, towards their situation?
Well, I mean, the men I interviewed felt like they essentially stumbled into a lucky situation. I didn't get the sense that they were going out of their way to actively exploit the gender ratio. Mm-hmm. It was, but you know, I did have women tell me stories like, well, one guy broke up with her because, and actually used the word market when he ended things, actually saying something along the lines of, the market for me is just too good. Mm. I think that same woman told me that it's not your fault, it's the ratio had become social shorthand among her friends.
And how does the behavior of the women change in this situation where there are more of them than of men?
I think the whole culture becomes more sexualized, and I think both men and women are more aggressive sexually, but clearly the men have more leverage.
What's astounding, I don't think many people know this, but in the appendix to your book, you list a long, long list of well-known colleges and universities, and the gender ratio is astoundingly lopsided in favor of where women outnumber men. The University of Florida, it's 58% to 42%. Providence College, 58 to 42%. Boston University, it's 62% to 38%. That's 2-1, isn't it?
It's 3 women for every 2 men. 60-40 is 3 women for every 2 men.
And then you have comments which you acknowledge in the beginning of the appendix. You went for the sort of most extreme and colorful comments, but you have comments.
I'm sure Boston University won't love the comment that I chose.
This is, I'm assuming, a male student says, freshman year at Boston University, freshman year is a sexual explosion. There are girls to go around and around again. James Madison University in Harrisburg, Virginia, 63% women to 37% men. That the deficiency of guys creates a scene that tends to embrace random hookups. Skidmore, 64% women to 36% men. Again, that's the same ratio as before. There are more casual hookups than relationships. There are only so many guys for all of these girls. So you also talk about the intersection of technology. Modern dating technology. I'm thinking about apps that allow people to very quickly sort of scan the neighborhood, literally the geographic area, for hookups. How much is that exaggerating the kind of behavioral changes that you're talking about?
I actually don't think it is, and I'm probably in the minority. But you know, when I read the Vanity Fair article about Tinder, I couldn't help but think back to what happened in the 1920s when there was a similar sexual explosion. And that was caused by another deficiency of men, one created by the casualty toll in World War I. However, most of the social scolds of the time blamed that sexual revolution not on demographics, but on the automobile, which supposedly, I think one critic claimed or called it a brothel on wheels. So I think the blaming Tinder, blaming apps, blaming online mm-hmm. dating is a distraction. A lot of the guys I interviewed whose behavior you'd probably find most repugnant, they were doing it the old-fashioned way. They were going up to pretty girls in bars and buying them drinks.
The premise of the argument that you make rests on another premise, and that is that if a woman has a college degree, she will only want to have a relationship with a man who has a college degree. I want to challenge that. I want to see how accurate that is. I want to see if you believe in that.
Well, I certainly don't endorse it, and I view it as very closed-minded, and I view it as one of the things we as a society have to get over. I mean, while statistically it doesn't harm a college graduate man to ignore non-college grad women, I tend to believe that that closed-mindedness might exclude women with whom they just might click. So I'm absolutely not endorsing that, and I view this as a as a bias, as an example of rigidity and closed-mindedness in the dating pool.
Do you anticipate that, given the numbers and given, let's say, there is an innate human desire for companionship, do you anticipate that this situation will even out and that, in fact, for as long as we have a situation in which there are more women with college degrees than men, that rather than go through life without a long-term relationship, that women will start to sort of white-collar, blue-collar marriages, so to speak?
Yeah, I call them mixed-collar marriages.
Mixed-collar.
And I absolutely believe that we're going to see more of them. And the fact is, you already see it to some extent in the African-American community, where the college gender gap is more extreme. If you've ever seen a Tyler Perry movie, for instance, there are all these pairings, or there are many pairings of professional, educated women married to construction workers or mechanics. These kinds of pairings are more common in the African American community, and I think they're on the leading edge, and we're going to see more of these.
All right, John Berger, author of Datanomics: How Dating Became a Lopsided Numbers Game. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
This is On Point. I'm John Donvan in for Tom Ashbrook, and we're talking about relationships in the age of online dating and mobile apps, and especially with the perspective of large changes in demographics. Well, in a TED Talk given in 2013, Amy Webb, who runs a digital consulting firm, talked about how she mastered the dating website OkCupid. First, though, she described the statistics that drove her to online dating in the first place.
Population of Philadelphia has 1.5 million people. Figure about half of that are men, so that takes the number down to 750,000. I'm looking for a guy between the ages of 30 and 36, which was only 4% of the population, so now I'm dealing with the possibility of 30,000 men. I was looking for somebody who's Jewish, because that's what I am, and it was important to me. It's only 2.3% of the population. I figure I'm attracted to maybe 1 out of 10 of those men. And there was no way I was going to deal with somebody who was an avid golfer. So that basically meant there were 35 men for me that I could possibly date in the entire city of Philadelphia.
Figuring out the algorithm on that one. Let's bring in Gretchen from Houghton, Michigan. Gretchen, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I'm from a very remote small town, and all the technology in the world isn't going to help the dating situation here.
Well, so you have a demographic situation of its own kind. In other words, a small population, remote and isolated.
Yes.
And what does that? Where does that? How do I put this? Where does that leave your heart?
It's difficult. I'm pretty much aware of the dating pool here, and it's very limited. So you know.
All right, Gretchen, thanks for your call. Thanks for being so honest and hang in there. Let me say that. Let's bring in some other people who think about this issue quite a bit. I want to bring in Samita Mukhopadhyay. She is a contributor to Al Jazeera, The Guardian, Fusion, and The Nation, and she's former editor of Feministing.com, executive editor there. She is also the author of Outdated: Why Dating is Ruining Your Love Life. Samita Mukhopadhyay, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
And
thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. And also joining us from Copenhagen is Elizabeth Plank. Liz is senior editor at Mike, a news site for millennials, where she also hosts Flip the Script. That's a weekly video series that confronts social issues. And she's correspondent for MSNBC Shift's Crystal Clear. Liz Plank, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Oh, it's great to have you. Now, Samita, you were listening into the conversation so far. We've been talking demographics. You know, Gretchen's point was on demographics in a sense as well, and John Berger was talking about statistics and the impact not only on life outcomes but even behavior in the dating process. What is your reaction to that? Do you think that it's making it harder for women to date, the lopsided college degree rate he was talking about?
So, you know, I think from the get-go, I take some issue with the framing of it. You know, all I could help myself thinking is if we reverse this conversation, we kind of wouldn't even be having it, right? In terms of if there was a shortage of, say, women, and all of a sudden men had to play by women's rules. And so I think that the overemphasis on kind of women's behavior and their ability to, quote, score and land a, you know, good prospect is based on a bit of an inherent double standard. And, you know, I was thinking about, we would never ask the question, you know, should men, are men's careers or education hurting their dating prospects? Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, just culturally what I was thinking about. And I think definitely from a rhetorical perspective, in terms of the numbers, there is not a single woman in New York that you will talk to that's not like, there's just not enough good men, right? And it doesn't necessarily feel like there's not enough men. You're constantly going on dates or swiping left to guys that you don't want to go out with, but you may not be meeting as many men that you want to have long-term relationships with. And so I do think it's interesting to look at the numbers. I just caution us to fall back on kind of some preconceived notions of how genders do behave based on, you know, some biological traits, because I don't necessarily think that's always true. Mm-hmm. I think that we can expect men to actually behave better. And I think that women are, you know, there's many factors that are causing young people especially to not have kind of long-term relationships right away. You know, the gap between when you start dating and when you start becoming sexually active and when people actually settle down and get married is wider than it's ever been, right? And so that creates, I think, a gap between, you know, and time for experimentation. And as a result of that, some not great behavior is coming out, right? The Vanity Fair article talks about that. But I also think, you know, there's an opportunity for us to ask people to do better.
Liz Plank, do you buy John Berger's basic premise that whether he doesn't endorse it, but he feels that he's recognizing the reality that women with college degrees generally don't want to settle down with men who don't have equal education. Do you buy that premise?
Look, I'm a big fan of economics. I'm a big fan of data. I love statistics. But I think, like any analysis that only looks at sort of the behavioral economics of it, is done in a vacuum. So there's a lot of other things happening. And I have to agree with Samita. I think that there are definitely gaps. There's definitely a lot of women earning a lot of degrees and coming out with a lot of education. And especially in New York City, in my experience, there's a lot of women who are killing it, who are who are self-starters, who are very focused on their careers and doing a great job. But they're finding it hard to find guys that are okay with that. So we have this education gap between women and men, but we haven't moved in terms of our attitudes towards it, about us being accepting of women who are very educated, who make more money perhaps than their partner, who spend more time at the office, who might, you know, stay at her job and get a promotion while if they have a baby, the guy stays at home. So there's a lot of shifts that are happening in terms of gender roles in relationships. And I think that we've been slow at adapting to that. So I don't think there's not enough men with a college degree out there. I think there's not enough men who are okay with maybe me having a master's degree and them not having one, or me making more money or being very focused on my career and that not being their jam. And I think just focusing on education is also a flawed perspective. It's not a flawed perspective. It's a very narrow perspective. People tend to mate with people who have the same income too. And so when there's still a gender gap, so women, even though they are more educated, are still making less than men. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing pairs of you know, occupational groups of women and men pairing each other who might not, you know, one of them might have a master's, one of them might have a bachelor's, but they're making the same amount of money because of the gender gap. So there's a lot of other factors in here that make this conversation much more complicated, I think.
So just to clarify what you're saying, you're saying that perhaps it's true that women with higher degrees are uncomfortable connecting with men who have lesser degrees, but the men with lesser degrees would also be uncomfortable connecting with women who have the higher degrees, that it goes both ways.
Right. And I would argue that the discomfort that the men are feeling is bigger than this, the discomfort than the women are feeling. Because men are used to being the provider. Men are used to being, you know, the one who brings the money home. And when that situation is reversed, I think we've been slow at adapting to that shift in sort of traditional masculine roles.
Let's bring in Morgan from Canton, New York. Morgan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
Well, I wanted to just chime in. I was a shy kid, and I managed to pull myself out of shyness by experimenting with pickup. I'm sure people have heard a little bit about that and all that.
Assume we have not, and give us the 15-second summary.
Oh, an elevator pitch. Well, it's a way to essentially capture and lead someone's imagination through skillful stories and be able to entertain, say one thing, it's interesting, say 10 things, you're essentially like an interesting person. And it remarkably changed, kind of brought out the closet socialite. I needed to do that. San Francisco, so many people, you know, if you're a shy person, you're going to get a little overlooked, especially as a guy. And I managed to find people that I really didn't want to be with, because I'm an educated person, college degree, artist and musician. And when I was over there, I was making a lot of money. But I came to a small town in upstate New York, and there weren't a whole lot of choices. But I actually am now engaged through the aid of OkCupid to a very educated girl. So I still use my understanding of being able to socialize through,
and you can retire your elevator pitch as well.
Morgan, I can.
Yeah. thanks for your call, and the fact that you made the reference to OkCupid, and before Sumita was talking about swiping. Again, let's move on to a little bit of the discussion about the technology, and John Berger expressed the view that the technology really isn't the central thing here, that it's not changing. It might be speeding things up, but not qualitatively changing it. I want to talk to both of you, Sumita and Liz, about that. And Sumita, you live in New York City, and you have expressed your willingness before we went on the air to talk a little bit about your own dating experience there. Thank you for being so brave. So how does it work nowadays? Tell us as much as you can about how the technology fits in.
So specifically kind of how dating in New York works, or how using these apps works?
Don't leave anything out.
Oh, okay. I would say, and I'm older, right? I'm in my late 30s, and so I'm not, quote, as you would say, at the club as often as, say, maybe a younger person might be. And I don't maybe come into contact with as many potential suitors. And so the internet has been this really great tool to kind of help me look outside of my circle and to meet guys that maybe I haven't dated already, because I've lived here for a long time. And, so it does bring this kind of increased variety. And so, and it's highly targeted, right? So you can account for age, and you can have settings so that you can specifically filter out, say, guys under 25 or people that don't have the same taste in bands as you do, and things like that. So it does allow for a kind of very specific experience and a very specific type of outreach in terms of dates. That I think is more possible with OkCupid, which was, a dating platform that's been popular for a couple of years now. Tinder is a little bit more of a, I think it tries to simulate a real life experience of, if you see someone and you find them attractive immediately or not, you either swipe left or swipe right. And so it's a much faster experience in terms of you just get a couple of pictures, you might get a couple of bullet points about them, maybe a few Instagram pictures. You won't have a ton of information. You kind of make an initial determination. And, I think the Vanity Fair article from last week really painted a fairly dismal picture about the role of Tinder in young people's lives in New York.
And the company's very unhappy about that, and actually is protesting that portrayal. I mean, just a sense of how quickly things have moved. 6 years ago, 2009, the movie He's Not That Into You, Mary, was played by Drew Barrymore. And she's complaining to her friend Anna, who is played by Scarlett Johansson, that she's overwhelmed now by all of the different dating platforms available to her.
I miss the days where you had one phone number and one answering machine, and that one answering machine housed one cassette tape, and that one cassette tape either had a message from the guy or it didn't. And now you just have to go around checking all these different portals just to get rejected by seven different technologies. It's exhausting.
Yeah, interesting. She calls them portals. Even that sounds a little ancient. But Liz Plank, the same question to you: is too much made of how social networking is impacting the courtship process? Is it oversold?
I think whenever if you look at anything in society and you discount the effect of technology, you're doing something wrong. I think technology is changing everything about our lives, and it's especially having a huge impact, especially right now, on relationships, on dating. Even for people who aren't using dating apps, their dating lives are impacted by the fact that most people are. And so you have this dating, you know, this online dating FOMO phenomenon, which I definitely felt during the hard months of the winter. I was like, wait, if everyone else is on these apps and I'm not, then no one's seeing my stuff. No one's looking up from their phones and like considering me. And so I felt like I needed to be part of it. And then I realized once I was, I didn't really want to. I actually think there's this myth that it's time-saving and that it makes you more efficient because you can rule out certain people based on a number of factors that are quote-unquote important to you. But I think in the real world, like, we don't make decisions that rationally, especially when it comes to relationships and who we want to connect with. We connect with people based on, you know, how we feel about them, not whether they, you know, rank in the height that we want or, you know, have the same faith as us or make the same amount of money. I think that those things become secondary.
Let's bring in
when you actually connect with someone.
I want to bring in Megan from Burlington, Vermont. Megan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I'm calling just because I live in Vermont. It's a rural state. It's a low population state, so online dating is kind of a necessity here. And I have a PhD, and I definitely will cop to the fact that if I see a guy on an online dating site that is less than a bachelor's degree, that I probably write him off too quickly. But I do also, I've found that guys that have bachelor's degrees in particular seem incredibly intimidated by the fact that I have a PhD and won't even approach me at all. And it's the guys that I'm a little hesitant about, the ones that have a high school degree or less, they're the ones that seem to be incredibly confident in contacting me.
Interesting. And when you get a non-bachelor's degree contact or somebody reaching out to you, you just the guy's got no chance, pretty much?
Not no chance. I've tried to go on a couple of dates, but at that point, it's obvious that we just don't have a ton to talk about. I love politics and music, and that's just, and even if they do like those same things, we're coming at them from completely different perspectives, so it just hasn't clicked.
Megan, at the beginning of your comment, you said that you live in a rural area, so social networking is a necessity. Well, it didn't exist 5 years ago, so what would you have done?
Quite frankly, I don't know, because I'm not a social butterfly. I don't like going to bars. So I go on regular first dates now, but they never really tend to go past first dates. I think I'd probably just stay home with my dog all the time.
Okay, Megan, thanks for calling. And again, like everybody else in this program, thanks for being so brave. Liz Plank, senior editor at Mike, a news site for millennials. Thanks so much for joining us today. It's been great to have
you. Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses made in America. They're engineered for comfort and long-lasting support by combining premium latex foam and memory foam. It's outrageous comfort at a polite price. Here's the great part. Pick the one that is best for you and try it out, risk-free for 100 days with free delivery and returns. Go to casper.com/onpoint and you can save $50. That's casper.com/onpoint. Now back to the show.
This This is On Point. I'm John Donvan in for Tom Ashbrook, and we are talking about dating and relationships, and for a sense of how things have changed over time, very recent movie Trainwreck, a character named Aaron, who is played by Bill Hader, calls Amy, who is played by Amy Schumer, the morning after they went on a date and slept together. Amy's friend Nikki, played by Vanessa Bayer, and Aaron's friend LeBron James, played by himself, all weigh in. So basically, this phone call comes, and Amy is shocked that the call came at all.
Oh my God, he's calling.
Why would he call? You guys just had sex.
It's probably a mistake. It's a mistake.
He's butt dialing you.
Hello?
Oh, hey there, it's Aaron.
Oh, this is Amy. I think you butt dialed me.
No, I dialed you with my fingers.
What'd she say?
Shh.
He called me on purpose.
Hang up, he's obviously like sick or something.
Please, yeah, what's up?
I was calling to say I had a really good time last night. I was wondering if you wanted to hang out again.
Will you say that again, please?
I was wondering if I could see you again.
You know what? I'm going to call the police.
We're speaking with Samita Mukhopadhyay. She is author of Outdated, Why Dating is Ruining Your Love Life. And joining us now from Olympia, Washington, is Stephanie Kuntz. Stephanie is professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College and also director of research at the Council on Contemporary Families at the University of Texas at Austin and author of, among other things, Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. Stephanie Kuntz, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks very much, John.
Stephanie, I previewed the train wreck clip by saying it sort of depicts what's new about the situation. Am I right about that? Have things changed that much?
Well, you know, I think we do have to put this in perspective. You know, women have been complaining about a scarcity of good men for years, and in some ways there's actually more good men available today. Despite the decline in the percentages at colleges, there are more men who respect women, who reject the use of domestic violence, who want to help with kids and housework. I kind of have to disagree with Liz. High-earning women are actually more likely to marry than they were in 1980. Educated women, what Samita said, I think, is the important thing. There is this huge gap between the time when initiates sex, and nowadays we don't have to, you know, pretend that we're not having sex, or we don't have to delay it indefinitely, and the time we get married. And that delay is very good. Every year you postpone marriage, it lowers your chance of divorce. But it creates a huge dilemma for sexually active women and men. How do you handle this long period of time when a relationship would be nice, maybe, and 70% of college students do have relationships over the course of the 4 years. But you also have the sexual urges, and you're also trying to prepare for a career. And hookups, you know, whatever their problems are, one way that people are trying to deal with this. So I don't think that we need to panic.
You have no nostalgia whatsoever for the good old days.
Having attended college in the 1960s, when the big problem was a guy calling every day until he thought he could get you into bed, I don't think that we really want to go back to that particular past.
All right. I want to bring in Kyle from Mansfield, Connecticut. Kyle, welcome to On Point.
Hey, John.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a point about online dating and how it's kind of changed my view of dating. I feel like I almost throw away a girl over nothing because I know that I have more available back on the website. You know, it's kind of like the Seinfeld effect. She laughs funny or she had a mole in the wrong spot. And so I think technology has really changed the way that I date anyway.
So you feel more like you're shopping?
Kind of, yeah. I just feel more likely, like I have to make a conscious effort to give a girl a second chance, you know, instead of just going with my first impression every single time.
Kyle, are you like just amazing? I mean, are you a catch?
No, not at all.
Really?
I am seeing a girl now that I met online who I like, and I'm hoping it goes well. But again, I'm worried about how far away she lives, and I'm almost willing to let it all go just because I don't feel like driving an hour and a half, you know?
So if you did not have the sense of oversupply, you would be driving the hour and a half, you think?
Yeah, I definitely think I would be making more of an effort to get to know the girls that I have the opportunities with better.
Well, I'm applauding everybody in this show for being so candid, but I do want to ask you, without judgment, How do you feel about the conclusion you've reached? You sound, I get the sense that you don't think it's that wonderful.
No, I think it's terrible. And I've been trying as hard as possible to give, you know, everyone a chance, no matter what the little hang-up might be for me. Because over the past 10 years, I've kind of been on and off online dating, and it hasn't worked out yet. And I think it's my fault, you know, not online dating's fault.
All right, Kyle, thanks very much for that call. Really, actually do appreciate that you opened up. Samita, what do you make of Kyle's story?
So that I think that also that commentary falls in line with a lot of the criticisms of online dating and of Tinder. And I do think that there you do come into contact with increased numbers, and you're constantly thinking and I do think sometimes, and technology in general, you know, social media, this could be said for social media, where you might spend more time on social media when traditionally you would have actually made plans to go see your friends, right? And it's easier to just be like, hey, I saw your update on social media, cute baby, great. And so I do think just the quickness and refined, you know, ways that we can just do online things, you know, for things that we want to purchase, people we want to date has increased. And I think if you have, you know, if you're very picky, you can kind of scale that pickiness in a rate that's never been done before. But I do think the other side of that is, you know, I would consider the possibility that if you are finding little excuses to not find a connection, then maybe you're not really ready for a relationship right now. You know, a bigger possibility, because I believe that people can sort through social media. I believe they can sort through online, because while we have more choices, the matches we finally end up making are actually stronger, right? They last longer. And, you know, to what, you know, to kind of piggyback on what Stephanie was saying, we are marrying later and those marriages last longer, right? And so I do think that while there is more numbers, the ones that we kind of do end up matching up with may be better matches for us long term. And so it's hard to hear, right, that, you know, men feel so comfortable kind of being really picky and in superficial ways, you know, that is,
right.
But I don't necessarily think that's one side effect of a bigger experience.
Well, I want to bring the point that you just made back to Stephanie Kuntz, is that he feels so comfortable being so picky. And yet Kyle also felt kind of really uncomfortable about who he is being so picky. So it sounded to me, Stephanie, like he is that guy that you talked about, who is more evolved. Sorry, go ahead.
He's maturing, and that's what's going on. And by the way, it's not just men who get picky about these things, you know? I mean, the women swipe really fast on for very superficial reasons. We live in a society, not just we have extended to romance the other parts of a society, a consumerist society that says you can have it just the way you like it, you know? Construct your ice cream sundae, construct your future match just the way you like it. And I think that has encouraged sort of an extension of the superficiality of adolescence. But I share Samita's confidence that people do grow out of this. And as soon as somebody starts saying, you know, maybe I'm being a little too picky, maybe I'm being a little too superficial, that's kind of a sign that they're ready to grow out of it. And again, I have to say, as someone who's studied these matches when there were plenty of men around in the 60s and people ended up in marriages that were very unhappy, that there's a lot of good news here, and especially for college-educated women. Many of them I'd have to disagree with Liz, too. Many of these men are really willing to accept a woman who is not only their equal, but has some skills and resources and achievements that he can admire.
All right, let's bring in Samantha from Warren, Vermont. Samantha, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Hi.
So I went to college, and where I live now, there are many more men than women. And I don't think that the dating culture was less casual or more romantic. Mm-hmm. I think that women's priorities are changing, too. And I'm in maybe a unique relationship. I've been with my boyfriend for 11 years. I'm 28. And every day, friends and family and strangers ask me why we're not married, and they're really surprised when I say that I don't want to get married. Or they'll even imply or say out loud, very clearly, like, "Oh, well, do you want to get married? And you're just waiting for him." And I'm like, no. And I'm offended because I wouldn't spend 10 years doing something that I didn't want to do. But I think, and my new favorite answer is, like, I have a really long to-do list, and so does he, and marriage is at the very bottom of it.
Wow.
So, and it's not, you know, it's not career-related, you know, that involves travel, wanting to buy a home, just wanting a full life that includes my relationship, but maybe not, you know, rushing to the aisle. So, I think it's a more layered discussion than just talking about influence of social media on dating or talking about whether there's more women than men. And also, by the way, I have a college degree and he doesn't.
And that's so, not, that obviously is not an issue for you.
Not a problem, yeah.
And what about on his end? Any sense that it's an issue for him?
Oh, that with education or work?
The education, yeah.
No, and also I pull in more income at this point, and it's been that way for a couple of years, and that's not a problem either. And I think that, and also I'll throw in, I don't want to speak for him, but I would say marriage is more of a priority for him than it is for me.
Interesting.
And people are always really surprised by that as well.
All right, Samantha, thanks so much for your call. And Samita, I mean, Samantha's case goes almost to your opening statement that there are a lot of factors in play. A lot of things are going on right now.
Yeah. Absolutely. I do think that while marriage continues to be one of our main social organizing principles, I think that the reason people get married has changed, right? And I think even 30 or 40 years ago, or my parents' generation, they got married and then they established themselves, right? And I think young people today feel they often have a to-do list, right? They have a list of things they feel they need to do before they feel ready to finally settle down and actually get married. Or some people don't want to get married. They don't agree with the institution. They don't feel like they need, the label necessarily, or, you know, or participate in the ritual. So I do think that there are so many different reasons why people are delaying marriage. But that seems to me the biggest shift, because, you know, for my parents' generation, for us to not be getting married is, you know, it seems outrageous to them, right? Mm. But I do think one of the shifts is women feel they want to finish their, you know, career, or they want to travel, or they want to buy a house, as Samantha was saying.
Let's bring in Arielle from Delafield, Wisconsin. Hi, Arielle. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I am a 26-year-old college graduate who owns a bridal shop in my semi-rural hometown.
Perfect perspective. So, thank you.
Yes. Dating for me has been quite difficult, and I also try to listen to each bride who comes into my store, seeing how they're meeting people and, you know, which bars maybe I should be hanging out at instead. But I think a big point that we haven't been discussing yet is noting on why the education disparages are happening. My longtime college boyfriend dropped out of college when I graduated, and since then I have continuously keep meeting more and more boys who have been dropping out of college, and they're not picking up harder working. They're filling in with restaurant jobs, trying to figure out what they're doing, and versus more blue-collar friends that I do have in my hometown area who have been, you know, very focused on working in construction and moving up to a better spot and doing that. And so I'm not necessarily against blue-collar dating, you know, with being more educated, but I think you have two different levels of this, too.
That's
college
really
dropouts aren't as dedicated, I feel like, to
fascinating. Dating. That's fascinating, Arielle. And the reason I say that is that we didn't get to this with John Berger, Stephanie Kuntz, but one point he also makes is that men mature later than women, and they're thrown into college and aren't, you know, they're going to drop out, as we were just hearing, and be a little bit lost. And he even argues for, he knows it's never going to happen, but he argues for a sort of delayed admission to college for men to address this issue. But what do you make of that last call's analysis that there might be more sort of grit in a guy who's working in construction than a guy who flunked out of his English lit class and never went back?
Well, I think there's more grit in those who go out and get a job and stick to it, and those who can stick to it through college. Mm-hmm. People who drop out before earning a degree, whether it's high school or college, you're tending to find people, you select for people who are less mature.
So that is a problem. And also, I think, particularly for working-class guys going to college, men, because of these long pressures on men to be male breadwinners, they actually tolerate lower levels of debt than women do, and they're more likely to drop out because they're scared of getting into debt. And there's one other way in which they're disadvantaged, and that is that they actually are advantaged in the short run. A male college dropout does not pay the penalty, the financial penalty in his first job for dropping out, as a female college penalty dropout does. But over the long run, he earns much, much less. So I think men are caught in a really hard place, that women have changed faster than men have. And men are changing, they are catching up, but there's still more work to be done. And I do totally agree with the callers who said that you should not just choose this on the basis of whether the guy has a college degree. In fact, we know that it used to be a divorce risk if the woman had more education than a man. Now it's not, but it is a divorce risk if the man has more education than the woman.
Well, we have really peeled back the onion on this in some interesting ways. I want to thank everybody who took part in the conversation. Samita Mukhopadhyay, author of Outdated, Why Dating is Ruining Your Life. Samita, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And Stephanie Kuntz, professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College and author of Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
It was a pleasure.
And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up Monday, Black Lives Matter. Tell what it wants from the Democratic Party on race and criminal justice. I'm John Donvan. In for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.